This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Hey, welcome to the huddle. Oh, wait. It's not the huddle. I look over, I see Stacy Ross.
Normally it would be.
I think it's the huddle. It's the Wyman and Bob show. Hey, you can text us at 710-710. Our text toy here, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. And this hour of the show is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Stacy, thanks for hanging around here. We, a little bit of an emergency, or not really an emergency. Bob had to take care of some stuff.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be here a little bit later.
Holding down the fort for just a little bit.
Yeah, we appreciate that. We saw your partner rushing out of here to try to get out to practice.
Yeah, last time he said that he was a little bit late, and he also said, this is exceptionally creepy, that he got there and was standing on the berm. If anyone's been to VMAC, there's basically this huge hill on one half of the field that everyone stands on to look down. And by the end of it, he was the only one standing there because he was just waiting and watching. And so people kept looking up at it, like players and coaches would look up like, what is this guy doing? It's just this one guy standing on the hill looking down at all of us.
He was the only one.
Yeah. People were calling him Jake Creeps.
Well, usually what happens is when they put you out there on the berm, they end up practicing on the far field.
Yes.
And I'm like, I should have brought my binoculars. But it's nice of them to have us out. And so, yeah, I was out there talking to Jake on the berm the other day. But today on the show, coming up at 3 o'clock, we got Ryan Roland Smith, our favorite Bogan, we call him. And then later on at 4 o'clock, we're going to have John Clayton and then Bob Glauber. Bob Glauber is Bob Stelton's friend. Is he New York Times?
Yeah, Newsday, like their national writer.
Newsday.
And he covers the Giants and just all NFL.
Gotcha.
And honestly, I've been trying to get him on for months.
Bob
so he's
Glauber,
happening now.
Bob Glauber loves Bob Stelton.
Yes.
Yeah, they're buddies. So, anyway.
Bob and Bob.
Yeah,
Bob are you going to be a little bit of a third wheel?
I am kind
Dave?
Of a third wheel.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Well, that
yeah.
was like you and Dave. It was Dave and Dave the other day. So, when Dave Craig was on.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So, Bob
Dave
was the third
Craig.
Wheel that time.
Have you ever heard when Dave Craig's on, Stacey, by
no,
the way?
No, no.
Oh, my gosh. It's just a mess. Just a whirlwind.
Just the two of you being a mess and just...
Mostly him. Yeah, it's mostly him. But he's just all over the place. But anyway, last night, Mariners, how about that game last night? I mean, this is one of the better hitting teams in Major League Baseball. Their second in home runs, fourth in slugging, eighth in hits, ninth in OPS in all of Major League Baseball. And the Mariners take him down 10-0. You get 8 innings out of Flexen. And, you know, he only gave up 4 hits. This is usually the other – this is kind of what – this will be like a power outage for the Mariners. Every once in a while, will they have, you know, 2 hits, 3 hits. Mm-hmm. And this time it was the Twins. And coming from Chris Flexen, you know, what an unbelievable story, Stacy, he is. Because, you know, you heard the story. Shannon Dreher did a really good job talking about him. First of all, I think he lost, like, is it 30 pounds, 40 pounds that, you know, he went through this whole body transformation, but he was pitching in the Korean Baseball League,
mm-hmm.
and they were watching him, like, on closed-circuit TV or something at, like, 2 in the morning, and they got kind of a jump on as far as his, you know, just scouting him and knowing who he was. And coming in, I remember in spring training watching him, he had an outing where he looked super nervous, and he was, like, sweating, and he kept pulling his hat off and looking at his notes and his hat. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a mess. fast forward a few months, and what an incredible outing last night.
It was phenomenal. I mean, it's certainly his best outing of the year and the best outing probably for any pitcher so far, with Kikuchi maybe trailing him. He's had a couple solid ones, too. What I love are two things. One, that it's not the only great outing he's had. Like, Chris Flexen has stumbled at times. We all know the game he gave up 8 runs in, like, 1 2/3 inning. It wasn't great. But he's had great innings, or excuse me, great games before. So it was nice to see this continue with his best yet. And I love the continued conversation about just surprises from the team. I thought that Chris Flexen would be a good addition. I didn't think, though, Dave, that he would be this good.
Yeah, same. I mean, he was, I think, a surprise to everybody. And cut number one, one of his, what, it was his 8th career, it's his career high 8th strikeout.
And again, the 2-2 to Sano, and it's strike 3 called. He got him looking. A career high 8 strikeouts for Chris Flexen, and there's 2 down for the Twins here in the top of the 8th inning. And what a performance by the right-hander Chris Flexen out of Newark, California. First year in a Mariners uniform. He has been outstanding. Strikeout number 8 and counting.
I like Rick Riz mentions that he's from California because I just, you know, think of Korea. I thought he's a Korean baseball league. That's where he came from.
That's, of course.
You think he materialized, like, out of Korea?
Yeah.
There was no Chris Flexen until just Korean baseball league.
That's
there he is.
Exactly right, yeah. So, anyway, yeah, just an awesome outing for him. And we'll go into more detail with that at 3 o'clock with Ryan Roland-Smith because, you know, he's the pitching expert. But, yeah, that was amazing. The other thing is, you and I were kind of chatting about this before the show started, Stacey. J.P. Crawford has – one of the things about him – and here are his numbers. I like going and cherry picking stats. You know, if you go to Pro Baseball Reference,
I find the ones I like and then I leave out the ones I don't.
Exactly. It's a, you know, and the Seahawks will do that all the time where, you know, we'll go into a game and it'll be the last 27 and a half games. Russell Wilson has,
yes.
You know, so you can, you know, kind of, but I just went with June. JP in June, 14 games, 7 doubles, 2 home runs, 8 RBIs. 8 walks, and then 12 strikeouts, which is 18%. And then he's batting .393, yeah. And his on-base percentage is .455. One of the things we talked to Divish coming out of spring training, and he said, you know, I don't think JP had a good spring, but he didn't hit the ball hard. And he's starting to hit it pretty hard right now. Sometimes he finds ways to kind of loop it in, but, you know, that first pitch strike that he swung on and just crushed last night, that's been a pleasant surprise because we know he's got the defense.
I certainly did not expect at this point in the year that I would be looking at Ty France and J.P. Crawford and they would have – do they have the same number of home runs, each of the two of them? I anticipated that Ty France, just being the hitter that he is, having a little more power, would have surpassed that. Ty France has still had a solid season, especially now that he's back from injury. With J.P., I – did not foresee this. Luke Arkins of Prospect Insider had this really interesting tweet just kind of pointing to literally the difference that plate appearances make. And he said, when you start getting over 1,000, things kind of start clicking for you. And he said, look, there's 3 guys on the Mariners that have over 1,000, which is Haniger, Seager, and then now JP, who's just over that. I think he's at like 1,118 or something around there. And you started to see that click for him. So I don't know if it's, you know, experience, just getting out there and things, you know, finally figuring things out. I don't know if it's luck because he's not, while he is hitting the ball harder in general, he's not like a power hitter. I mean, this is just, he is just able to get on base by having the ball drop more often. He just so happens to, you know, get out there and get singles. And what I've loved is that in the season opener, we were talking about what we wanted to see from so many guys. And one of the things we wanted to see from JP were just extra base hits. That if you're not going to be, you know, one of these star shortstops, the Corey Seagers of the world that hit a ton of home runs, be the guy that can just get on base by whatever means necessary and ideally get to second. And he's been able to do that.
Yeah, it's been, you know, and as you're talking about his offense, because Bob always tells the story that, you know, when he came from Philly, I believe, mm-hmm. that, you know, his reputation was offense, that he was hitting the ball, it was defense, it was a problem, and then we saw kind of the opposite. And, you know, a guy that I hope follows in that same pattern is Evan White, because you, once again, you get a really good defensive player and a great first baseman, but he's just not hitting right now. And like you mentioned, you know, kind of follow the Fraley model. Just get on base, you know. So hopefully that will happen. Other good news. This is Bob doesn't like – I shouldn't say that. We were skeptical of Luis Torrens coming back because they sent him down.
Skeptical is a nice word for it.
I'm trying to be nice.
Yeah, exactly.
He went 2-for-4 last night.
Right.
How about that? He proved us wrong. So good for him. I'm thinking he probably listened to the show, and he got angry. And so he went out there. And
he was like, I'll show Bob Stelton and Dave
Wyman. Yeah, I'll get an RBI and a couple of hits and score a couple of runs. But that was nice. But I mean, you can understand why, because if you look at his numbers down in AAA, he was batting like .215. So when you send somebody down to Tacoma, you expect to see better numbers, but not great from him. And then he comes up, he has a good game. Another guy I really like, Stacey, is Shed Long. And, you know, he hit that triple last night that just cleared the bases. That was such a perfect hit because it shot through the gap, but then that ball just died. It just died down there. And so, you know, he was able to get around to third base. One of the reasons why I like him so much, we had him down in spring training. He did his interview with us, and then he just hung out with us during the break and was just chatting.
Oh, I love that. I love that he did that.
He is a guy I root for, and he's starting to look better and better. And so I think a lot of people had kind of written him off because injuries and, you know, he just hasn't performed. And last night he had a couple of hits, the three RBIs I mentioned on the triple. That was good to see from him.
I love Curtis joking. Curtis Rogers, he joked about just loving how many accessories Shed Long plays with and just having a lot of respect for, like, I appreciate the fit that you brought to the game today. Yeah, no, you're right in that he's a guy that, you know, smaller dude, but still really likable guy that had kind of been forgotten about, you know, spent the offseason and much of the season recovering from that shin injury. You finally get back out there, and to see him get going is great. I mean, we were having conversations, you know, a month ago with Shannon Dreyer about, hey, maybe the biggest need is getting a second baseman. Like, we're not even looking at Shed Long, and that those don't have to be mutually exclusive. Like, you can get a second baseman or a shortstop in free agency and still find a way to play these guys. But yeah, it's been really great to see that from him. And getting back to Evan White, like, where is Evan White? Do we know where Evan White is?
In Tacoma. He's rucking.
I know, but I guess I didn't anticipate he'd be gone for this long. It's making me a little nervous.
I thought that was more of an existential question.
Oh, where is he? Yeah. You know, it could be. It could be. I do hope that what you see, though, Dave, from him is really from any of these guys. What Taylor Trammell has been able to do once he kind of got back from getting some work in the minors was so encouraging. And I don't know. I've never, you know, been a player. So I don't know if getting sent down once or twice helps things click or if it's just kind of getting some work, but I really hope that we see that kind of change for Kelnick when he gets back up, for White when he gets back from injury, and obviously back up from Tacoma. And I hope that that's what we're seeing a little bit. I know Shed wasn't there, but in his return from injury.
Yeah, well, and Evan White is batting .333, so I mean, he's doing what you're supposed to do down there. And that was what was kind of concerning about Luis Torrens, is that he was not doing what you're supposed to do down there. I have to say, though, that Taylor Trammell set the bar pretty high for everybody. Because remember, he immediately went to Salt Lake, and he was batting like 5-something.
Yeah.
You know, he was just killing it.
It was absurd. He was raking.
Yeah, he cooled down to a .384.
Cool .384.
Yeah, but
pathetic,
you know,
.384.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're going to compare everybody to him and his trip down. And we talk to Mike Blowers every week, and, you know, he says, look, it's going to take a couple of times. So I don't know about you, Stacey. I feel like, Mike, I don't know how you feel. I feel like we, at the beginning of the year, were like, look, this isn't going to be a winning team. They're probably not going to vie for the playoffs. So we just got to, you know, take it easy and, you know, let these guys develop and everything. But we overreact every day
on
everything. Like, you know, come in here. There's sometimes where Bob will be mad. You know, they only got 2 hits. It's ridiculous. they can't sustain it. And like, yeah, I know. And then, you know, then they have a game like they had last night. So I don't know. It texted in to 710-710. Powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company, because people are the same way. I think no matter how much you tell yourself, look, we're gonna let this play out over the long haul. We're not gonna overreact to every game. You get mad sometimes, and when you invest your time, and you feel like, I mean, last night you feel great, the high highs. Then there's the low lows, and there's gonna be more of those to come. But I think that's what's great about being a fan. I mean, if you were to really just go, oh, okay, well, they won 10-0. Okay, yeah, whatever. We'll see what happens next time. It's no fun. I think it's good overreacting, and that's the kind of response typically we get from the texters. Mostly lately we've been getting about how Kelnick apparently is terrible and that he is just not a 5-tool baseball player.
Every scout is wrong.
At all. Yeah, exactly. So, everybody had him ranked the third best prospect in all of baseball.
Now, I will say, I want to get to a point as a city that we are a baseball city that complains about single games. Like, I want to get to a point where you see Dodgers fans sometimes where the Dodgers will have one of the best teams in baseball, have a bad outing, and they'll be like, this team's so embarrassing right now. Like, I want to get to the point where every day it's not, you know, stupid for someone to complain about the Mariners getting no hit or for someone to actually be excited about them getting 10 runs. And obviously we've done both. I've been really upset before with this team this mm-hmm. season, even knowing they're not going to contend. And then last night was such a fun game to watch, and you're excited for these guys. And the best part is that some of this production is coming from guys that you want to be as part of this team. It's, I mean, yes, like Bowers had, I think he was 3 for 5 or something, yeah. But you also want to see good stuff from J.P. Crawford, who is going to be with you either at shortstop, maybe you move him to second, whatever you do, you want to see it from those guys that are going to be with you. And I don't know, I personally really want to be that. Like, I want to get to the point where people can complain on a Tuesday about a game. And
okay, I'll
and
do
there's
that then.
And there's, yeah, well, I'm just saying there's the feeling that, like, playoffs are at stake.
Well, I'll say this,
the postseason is at stake.
If there's something to take away from yesterday, my only regret is, why did you have to score all those runs when Flexen went 8 innings and shut down the entire team? That's the perfect. That's the perfect 2-0 win.
No, it's
you don't
excessive,
need 10
and
runs
I like
then.
It. It's a little extra.
You could have saved those runs. They hadn't scored in double digits all season long. They put together 10 runs on a night you didn't need it.
This is getting
that's a great complaint, though.
This is getting dangerously close to Danny O'Neill logic, because Danny used to talk about banking runs. Have
yes.
you ever heard that? Hairbrain.
You have a finite amount of runs.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a given week or a given month, but you're going to need those runs somewhere.
So, yeah, Danny's idea was that at the end of the game, you go, okay, well, we only needed one. You know, maybe we'll take 2 just to make sure, and then you can bank the rest of the runs, and that baseball should be able to do that. It was a very harebrained idea by Danny. But, yeah, that's dangerously close to thinking like Danny O'Neill, Mike.
I like the idea of Danny thinking that luck is something you, like, reach into a bag and pull.
You can manipulate luck.
Good luck. Yeah, you can just grab it.
Yeah, that's my mindset, too. So, all right, I don't know if that's good or not. That was the only complaint I had. You had a day-to-day complaint about the game.
So, were you getting mad, like, when you saw, like, late home runs? Were you like, no, don't do that,
stop.
It was more just like, well, of course. You know, on a night they could have had 5 and 6 and been comfortable, and the game would have been a little quicker. Then right. Ty France is still mashing home runs at the end. I did like they got to 10, though. You know, 9-0 is just...
You like the double digits.
Why did that happen?
Double digits
is clean and good. Yeah.
9-0 is you had 2/3 of a cheesecake. Just finish it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to, like,
I do know what you mean.
2/3 of a cheesecake. All right. I've
you might as well
comparison.
Eat the whole thing at one point.
That's true. All right. I got a question for you really quick. You were talking about people going forward. Mike's heard me talk about this yesterday a little bit. The Padres, you know, they did a whole rebuild thing, but they went and paid for Manny Machado, mm-hmm. got him there. Maybe this isn't a proper comparison, but with Nelson Cruz over with the Twins, do you look back and go, in 2019, you know, could they have made him part of this, you know, rebuild and part of the future now? And I said this to Ryan Roland Smith earlier, that, look, they didn't have a crystal ball. They didn't know that he was going to mash into his late 30s and 40s. But as far as the kind of guy that he is, and how he's hitting now. I mean, the other night he didn't hit any home runs. He had, what, 3 singles? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's batting .300. He's a great guy. I mean, we've told all the stories about how much we just love Nelson Cruz. Is there a side of you that thought he should have been part of the rebuild?
Yes, I completely understand.
Paid him.
Yeah, I completely understand why they didn't. But I do wish that now. Hindsight's 2020. And for anyone who's saying, like, well, you want great players, why does it matter if he's a good guy? And he is. Everyone I know loves Nelson Cruz, and it's impossible not to root for him. That matters in a young clubhouse. Having a guy like that who people come in immediately respecting because they watched him, you know, when they were teens or even younger than that, to, you know, coming into the league and having him around. Yeah. I mean, there's also times when I think back of, like, there was a time when they had a couple stars, legitimate stars on this roster and couldn't get to the postseason. And you just wonder, like, what move could have been different? What series could have been different? Because they've been close.
Yeah. All right. Let's take 2.
Well, it was a crazy morning in the NBA. Some bad news for a couple of NBA stars. First of all, Chris Paul is out indefinitely due to COVID protocols. Now, there's not a definitive answer if he himself was positive or if he is just contact tracing. Some other people said he did have the vaccine, but he's still out for now. Now, the Suns are sitting in the Western Conference Finals waiting the winner of the Clippers-Jazz series. But the Clippers got some news that Kawhi Leonard has a knee injury, and they fear it could be an ACL injury.
Oh. You've been following the NBA playoffs?
Not as closely, but I do really like the Suns, and I don't know why. So I was upset with the Chris Paul news.
Yeah. I love Kawhi Leonard. love watching him play. But yeah, I wonder with the COVID protocols, and I'm curious that, like, if you get vaccinated and they're still testing him, and there could be a positive test. I don't know. You know, maybe as time rolls on, they'll start to relax some of those things, you would think. But yeah, that's got to be frustrating. And you know, Seahawks, you know, they were blessed last year. They really did not get anything, and they did a good job with it, obviously. But yeah, especially going into the playoffs, I think I was worried the entire year, going, oh man, they're going to get, you know, they're going to be, I thought they were going to be 13-3 was my prediction last year. They were close. And then, you know, I thought, oh man, they're going to get there and something like that's going to happen. But the NFL made it happen. And you would think the NBA would try to find a way to make it so their stars are able to play if it's kind of a, you know, a lesser protocol that's been violated.
Yeah, and well, the Chris Paul thing's kind of weird because isn't he reportedly also vaccinated? So maybe came into contact and they're just being careful. The good thing for the Suns is he's not like their only star, right? They still have Devin Booker. They've got other guys they can turn to in the meantime. So it's a bummer because I think they still might be like the betting favorite to take it. Really popular choice right now. A lot of the teams left, fun teams to watch. So that's a bummer. But yeah, it's, man, it's one of those things you always worry about with any team, any league in the back of your mind because you can't control it. You cannot control it, whether it's the COVID protocols, whether it's injuries, right, in the case of Kawhi. Even when you look at, we were talking about Rashad Penny earlier, being worried about, you know, what his season would look like.
All right, well, it's a big day for COVID protocols. The NFL and the NFLPA did announce their upcoming protocols for the 2021 season. And there's kind of some vast differences between unvaccinated and vaccinated players. So they're obviously not forcing anyone to get the vaccine, but they're essentially making it very difficult if you're going to be an unvaccinated player. The big one that jumps out here, only fully vaccinated players and coaches will be allowed on team charters. So you could have a player potentially having to fly themselves to an NFL game.
You follow, like, in a minivan? Do you follow the team bus?
Yeah,
like,
I
want to
so.
Know, like, what's that like?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I wonder if they're going to, again, I wonder if they're going to relax these things as time goes on. Here's what I would say. I can't imagine judging anyone either way. If you decide to get the vaccine, it's your personal choice. And if you don't, you know, that is also your personal choice. And so that's the part I feel pretty strongly about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is, I think it's going to be, it's not so much that they're going to penalize everybody that's unvaccinated. It's just that they're going to make it, it sounds like, pretty difficult. I mean, I'm thinking you're probably going to fly in first class, right? You know, would the team take care of that? I mean, I'm not sure how that's going
to
play out.
There's a lot to sort through. So it was a big series of tweets from Tom Pelissero, and he kind of had a chart side by side of, like, unvaccinated players can't do this, basically the same strict protocols they had last year. Vaccinated players, essentially no regulations now if you're a vaccinated NFL player or coach this season.
Okay. All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Coming up next, Stacy, do we have another contract to worry about? We're already worrying about Jamal Adams. Talk a little bit about Dwayne Brown as well. That's coming up next on Wyman and Bob.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. We got Stacy Ross. Very nice of you to sit in with us, Stace, and loved having you. This hour of the show is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Yeah, so I'm comfortable with one guy being, you know, having a contract problem. And by the way, I was going to text Jake because Jake was saying that this Jamal Adams thing could be like the biggest, you know, hardest contract ever. I'm like, what about those two Russell Wilson contracts? Those were kind of
right. How about the one with
tenuous.
The deadline where we were notified at midnight via cell phone video from Russell's bed that it got done?
That's right.
That I was also very nervous about that. Before and afterward, weirdly.
I like that. We got verification from Russell's bed. Yeah, we got a deal. But no, I mean, here's the one thing about Dwayne Brown. I've always said this, Stacey. I feel like that there's three guys. You want to have three positions that you don't worry about. And this is just in my puny little head. You want to have a corner that you know you can count on. One good cover corner, because I just think they're so hard to find. And they had that with Richard Sherman for years. You want a kicker that you don't have to worry about. I don't want to talk about the kicker. I just want to have to not worry about him. And then the other one is the blindside tackle, which is Dwayne Brown. And now all of a sudden we're talking about Dwayne Brown, you know, whether or not he gets a new deal. I just didn't even want to face that. But I just he is such an important – I mean, obviously all the focus is going to be on the contract of Jamal Adams. But what about Dwayne Brown? I mean, do you worry about him?
Yeah, it's one of those when it rains, it pours situations where you saw the news and you thought, oh, God, have we opened our show today talking about Jamal Adams and here comes Dwayne. I don't worry really about either because it feels like you have no choice but to do it. With Jamal Adams, I wonder how long that could go. His agent didn't get his last deal done, not with Jamal, but I think with, Tre'Davious White, until September. Yeah. So I do wonder how far those negotiations could go. Obviously, I'm also guessing there's a couple $1 million difference in the asking price.
Yeah.
For Dwayne, I just think he's meant so much to this organization. And you know this, Dave. He is one of the most respected guys in that locker room. And I don't know that they have a sure plan behind him. In fact, they don't, unless Stone Forsythe works out. But this guy's a rookie. You don't know what you have in him yet. And so I think that there's just, you almost have no choice. I would also imagine, given Dwayne's age, that the contract extension would still be for fewer years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at Andrew Whitworth. We've been talking about him. What is he going to be, 38, I think, 39?
Near 40.
Yeah. So, I mean, and from that respect, Dwayne Brown's still a very young man, still a very young player. But yeah, you need to have, I mean, Forsythe, I think, is as much of a project as you can have. I'm not saying it's not going to work. I'm just saying, first of all, I mean, you don't see a lot of 6'8" guys. I mean, I think that there is a height thing that makes it, you know, leverage is everything in the NFL. I did a little football 101 thing on him, and the things that I saw, one thing, he shut down that Ojulai kid from Georgia in the game that they played. The other thing is he has really good hands, but his feet, you know, need a lot of work. But, I mean, he's going to need, I would say, a couple of years behind Dwayne Brown.
I would anticipate. I mean, this is a guy that you guys remember was projected to go anywhere from the second round to potentially the seventh.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So when someone has that wide of a projection, it means that he's got a great ceiling, but a couple notable red flags for people. And I think for a lot of people, it was run blocking. They didn't run a ton. But I think there were still, you pointed them out, other red flags that people who know a bit more about football and are actually watching these guys closely know to watch out for. I wouldn't feel comfortable betting on him. He's such a likable guy. We talked to him. We had an interview. I'm rooting for his success. I hope it works out. I'm not betting on him being your left tackle right now. I think you have no choice but to extend Dwayne Brown.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, is just what he means to this team. And he's one of my favorite guys to talk to. You know, he's just very calm, his leadership, everything. There was last year I was watching, there was a fight out there. It was Tommy Champion, who he's just one of the guys. I think he's still on the roster, but we talked to Brandon Schell, and he said he thought he was one of the funniest guys on the roster, but he was pretty fired up, and he got in a fight, and he wasn't going to let it go. And so Mike Iupati and Dwayne Brown just kind of went over and just like shielded him. And then Dwayne Brown, you know, went up and started talking to him. And like you could see the guy's body language just start to relax because, yeah, Dwayne is just, he's just everything you want in a leader. And the other thing is, if there ever is some kind of, do I need to see Dwayne Brown out at practice? No.
Yeah.
We don't need to see Dwayne Brown out there. I think he falls in the same category as Walter Jones. Walter Jones would hold out every year, show up, play his tail off, and then, you know, next year do the same thing. So he doesn't need to be in camp. I feel like, you know, maybe they can just skip camp for him, give him some time to rest his legs and things like that. So, but also, I think the same thing applies to Jamal Adams and Dwayne Brown. They both came from bad situations. I sent an email this morning that was a quote from Jamal Adams where, you know, he was just talking about how great it is here and how he said something about trick dice. He's like, where are the trick dice? Come on.
There has to be another shoe to drop.
Yeah, there's got to be something that's going on here that I'm not seeing. Yeah, he said, I knew there was a big difference when I walked in, and then maybe 2 or 3 months later, I'm still poking myself saying, is this real? There's no way they run this organization like this. This has to be trick dice. So, I mean, they both come from those situations. I don't know what was worse, Houston and everything that they went with, you know, through down there, or the New York Jets, where Jamal Adams came from, but I feel like that's going to work in the Seahawks' favor.
I think so, too. I mean, I think that, you know, we talk about any bad team having to potentially pay more for guys, right? That's a conversation we've had about the Mariners. Are they going to have to pay more to get top free agents because you've got to tell them you've got something? Seattle's got the opposite problem where, you know, we're going to punch our ticket to the playoffs. Like, everything would have to go wrong for us not to do that. They've done it every year but one during Carroll's tenure, or at least Russell Wilson's. And, you know, you anticipate that that's going to be the case. They need to follow up on their half of that, though. If you're going to say, hey, take a discount here because we can win, you got to get back to a championship.
Yeah, really quick before we go to break, let's hear from Pete Carroll, cut number 4, talking about Dwayne Brown in the offseason and what they expect from him as far as contract goes.
We're helping Dwayne get through a great offseason. He's doing terrific right now. We're just going to keep cruising on through it and make sure that he's at his very best. We're always talking about the business stuff, so that's always something that's topical, but because he is in his last year coming up. But everything's going great, and he's had a great offseason so far. It's better than it was last year. He's ahead of schedule, so he's in good shape.
All right, so it says here in parentheses, is this you, Lefko? Kind of evasive about answering whether a new contract has been discussed.
That was the question, and that was the label on this cut, too. They asked him about the contract for Dwayne Brown, like, why is he over there not practicing? And Pete didn't answer the question.
No, he was like, we're taking care of Dwayne, you know, letting him relax. And you're like, what?
All right. Well, hey, Stacy, thanks for hanging around. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it was good seeing you guys. Good seeing Frank.
We've got the triumphant return of Bob Stelton and, most importantly, Frank. Frankie is
Frank's
back
here
in the studio. It was one of my favorite shows we did last Friday. Frankie in the studio. He's all patched up. Had a little bit of an adventure at the vet. And he's wearing a little socky, it looks like. And, yeah, he's good to go, man. All right, coming up next, we will talk about Rashad Penny a little bit. It's funny, I just diagrammed a play where he ran for a 58-yard touchdown against the Philadelphia Eagles in Football 101 this week. But talk about what we make of Rashad Penny, his progress. We'll dive into that next on Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Hi, Dave. Bob, I called it the huddle when I looked over and saw Stacy.
Yeah, it's been a hectic afternoon. I appreciate Stacy hanging around for a couple of segments while I got the boy all patched up here.
All that matters is that Frank seems to be on the mend.
Yeah, it's going to be a bit. It's going to be a bit of work, but yeah, we're good.
It's not good when it's on the paw.
No, it's not good because he keeps chewing on it.
Yeah,
and that makes things
lots
worse.
Lots of licking.
Some blood. It was no good. Anyway, I'm here. I know you guys went through the game last night. You're talking Rashad Penny, my favorite topic.
Yeah, you came in with that. Yeah, that's how we welcome Bob back. After a hectic day, let's talk about Rashad Penny. I was just mentioning to Stacy that there did a little Football 101 thing where I showed a trap play. It was from the glory days when I played, and it was a trap play.
Okay.
And just how you should step up. And then we showed the 2019, 58-yard run, 57-yard run that Penny had for a touchdown?
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, so, yeah, I was just looking at that going, yeah, look at him run, man. Look at him. He looks good. And now, you know, he's got a little cleanup thing. I'll say this, as far as the cleanup thing goes, that can be a good thing.
Yeah?
I had a really major, I had my ACL reconstruction. I think I had, like, 3 cleanups.
Do they tell you when you get that surgery that, hey, you're going to be back, we're going to need to do some follow-up on this? Or is the assumption that, hey, we do this, you should be good, but something could happen? I'm just wondering if that's protocol, like, hey, we're going to let it heal, but we're going to have to come back and do some cleanup, like that's anticipated.
Yeah, and you know what it does? I don't remember, actually, whether they said that to me, but what it does is there's scar tissue that ends up building up, and then if you get too much of it, you know, an overreaction, then things get kind of clogged up. I'm not a knee expert, although I should be because I've had enough surgeries. But, yeah, it just helps the process along. So, I mean, you can break up the scar tissue, which is one of the most painful things ever. I'd almost rather have a surgery than some of the things that I had to do to break up, you know, like getting your knee straight and they would push on it and then crank it back. And, oh, man, I would just be sweating afterwards. But you can accelerate the process by going in. And, you know, I know it's always a little bit they're so good at doing surgeries now that, you know, typically you don't have mishaps.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out if this is something Pete and the organization knew was coming. Like, all right, he had a surgery.
I would say, yeah.
He had what? How many? He had a couple of carries, you forget, that he had last year. Played in three games, 11 carries, 34 yards. So he played last year, but I wonder if they knew, hey, down the road, this is going to be something that needs to be addressed again on a small level, trying to figure out whether this is a surprise or not. But it's such a make or break year for him, even if he were healthy and he was just a guy who hadn't gotten a lot of time. Because Chris Carson is the dominant back. He's your premier back. He's your workhorse. So what is Penny going to need to show this year in order to convince the team, hey, I'm worth keeping around. I'm worth re-signing. Now, to me, this sets him back even more, potentially. Yeah. And here's Pete Carroll talking about him, saying, obviously, it's an important year for Rashad.
Every year is important, and this one is for him for sure. You know, as much time as he missed last year, you know, sometimes, you know, a knee, and he had a serious knee injury. It just takes a whole nother year to get back. And so just the cleanup stuff and what he's ready to take on right now, he can run full speed. We just want to make sure that his strength is balanced out in his quads. And so there's no reason for us to take a chance right now when he gets in a bad situation. So his attitude's great. His mentality's great. And yeah, it is. For every guy, every year is ridiculously important to us and of value and all of that. And certainly it is for Rashad.
Well, and I would say, look, every player is different. Now, do you remember Adrian Peterson blew out his knee? I want to say it was like week 16. And he was back week one.
And ran for over 2,000 yards.
He ran for $2,000. Yes, he did. And, you know, that guy is one of those people that just nothing's going to get me.
Probably not a fair standard to use.
Yeah.
Right? To
Adrian
compare,
Peterson's pretty
that
tough.
That was freakish.
Well, and Frank Gore's that way too. I mean, he's had both his ACLs replaced, but everybody's different. You know, I think the thing about Rashad Penny that kind of bothered me, he's a baby, you know, he had his finger and he had to miss practice and everything. It wasn't about the finger itself, it was about him missing practice,
right?
And I think he's one of those guys that needs to practice. He can't just step right in. If I could give Rashad Penny anything, I told him one time, I think you need to start running people over, because he is a big solid dude, but he needs confidence.
But is that good advice for a guy who appears on some level that he could be fragile?
He broke his finger and then he blew out his knee. I can't remember. I know it was down in LA. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it wasn't because he was trying to run somebody over. And
right.
The thing is, you know, if you have that in your game, it creates a lot of mystery to a tackler, you know, like Chris Carson. He might jump over you or he might plow you. Yeah, because he's a big, solid dude, but I just don't think that he has that mindset to be able to overcome injuries quickly. He's just one of those guys, and I'm not saying that he's weak or anything like that. He's just different, you know. Every player is different. So I would say the fact, you know, you mentioned or asked the question, you know, is that common? Did they expect that? I would say yes, but not now. Why now, I wonder?
Well, because he ran last year. He played last year. So is this something that could have been done earlier in the offseason, immediately following the playoff exit?
Well, exactly. That's what makes me wonder is, you know, you would think that, you know, so, I mean, I'm led to believe by this. Jim used to say that a lot, and I would always say, well, who's leading you? But we're led to believe that it was because of his workouts. It was something he was doing in the offseason, because if it was something from the season that he needed a cleanup, because that's typically when you do it.
Yeah.
After you're out there getting tackled, contact, all that stuff, you know, full speed. Things that happen in a game, you can never duplicate in any kind of workout. So that's the thing that concerns me a little bit with him. But, I mean, are we counting on Rashad Penny?
No. No, yeah. I hope we don't have to, because that would say Chris Carson got hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason you're counting on him, he'd be a nice addition. It'd be nice to have a 1-2 punch.
Be a bonus.
Yeah. But in terms of, like, who's gonna really, really step up in this run game, Carson's your guy. You're not counting on Penny. You need him to be that 1-2 punch. But in terms of relying on him, no, I don't think you are. All right, coming up, he's with us every week. Always fun to talk to Ryan Roland Smith about Mariner baseball. It's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.